Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Pocket Theology from our couple-month-long hiatus. This is going to be a really short little intro episode where we're just going to kind of tell you what we've been up to, some things that we've learned while we've been gone, and we'll get back on course with our regular episodes here soon. I do want to let you know about a few of the episodes we have coming up. We're going to do some episodes on the secular worldview versus the Christian worldview and how secular discipleship affects us. We're going to do a couple episodes about different ministry roles in the church, different ministries that us and some of my coworkers are involved in. And that'll be really exciting, we think, give you kind of a view behind the curtain, as well as telling you why those ministries matter and how you can get involved in a meaningful way. So thanks so much for joining us, and we hope that this is helpful. Martin, greet the people.
You'd think with, you know, 4 months notice, I'd be able to come up with a new greeting, but I got nothing.
That's all right. I'm not going to have anyone for the first episode that you host too, so I'll forgive you. Martin, I have a few questions for you, just so we can fill people in on what's been going on. The first one. Questions. I don't answer questions without my lawyer present.
Exactly.
The first one, what have you been doing over the last like 2.5-3 months while we've been on hiatus here?
So my wife actually checked. The last time we posted anything was in September. So it's been like 4 months.
Oh, yeah.
It has been a very long time.
It has been a long time, man.
So
but we're back. So what have you been doing?
We're back. Got to think about what I started since then, because we've started a lot of things. So our church is currently going through a remodel, which we've kind of been going through for a long time, but I've gotten more involved, I guess, because they're doing stuff that I can do, like paint a wall. I have also began working with another ministry part-time. I'm still at North Grand Christian Church, but I am also working with CCF part-time, which is Campus Christian Fellowship. They are a college ministry that is not affiliated with a specific church, but they are a restoration movement in the state of Iowa at University of Iowa, University of Northern Iowa, and Iowa State University. And so if anybody listening is a student at any of those campuses, feel free to find somebody from CCF, or you can email us and I'll tell you who to connect with. But I started working with them part-time in November, and then we've been trying to start a discipleship ministry pathway type thing that I've been kind of put in charge of. And so I've been working on creating a standardized discipleship path for people to go through so that they can learn more about Jesus, grow closer together, and learn how to do the same thing for other people. And so those are really the three big things. I'm still working with the youth, still working with the kids, but those are the big time-consuming projects that I'm working on.
We're going to be doing an episode with you where I'm interviewing you about youth ministry, so we're going to leave that one off the table. We've talked about it some in the past as well. But for those other three, just in a few words, real quick, why should a church care to renovate its building? Why does college ministry matter? And I know it's hard to say these in just a few words, but the short version. So why does college ministry matter? And then why do discipleship pathways matter?
A church should renovate their building because, believe it or not, people judge churches the same way that they judge people. And if you look gross, they don't really want to talk to you.
I was going to say the same way they judge businesses. Like, you'd never go back to a store that has a disgusting bathroom.
But I would, but I'd never use the bathroom.
Okay.
And it depends on if I can get what I want there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a conversation for another day. Anyway. Yeah.
But yeah. You look at somebody on the street and you go, oh, they haven't showered in a couple days. I ain't going to talk to these people. You're going to do the same thing with the church. If it looks like the building hasn't been taken care of, you're not going to visit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about visitor sensitivity. Also, like, do all things unto the Lord, you know? Take care of your building. It's a resource for the kingdom. Treat it right. All right, why does college ministry matter?
Because most of those kids, or most of the students who show up, at a university are in a completely new environment. They have no church connections, and a campus ministry, especially CCF, is very present on campus. And so it is more of a way to go to students than a way to wait for them to come to you. But also, youth as a whole are just leaving the church, and it's becoming more and more apparent at the college level is when a lot of those choices get made. So it's important to, it sounds terrible, but to sink your teeth into them when they get there and drag them kicking and screaming to Jesus. But it's usually not kicking and screaming. It's usually grab their hand and say, hey, we're friends now. Let's follow Jesus together.
Yeah. It's easy when you're alone for the first time to walk away from Jesus when you have no church, maybe no Christian friends, or at least not publicly Christian friends. You know, your parents aren't there. Your pastors aren't there. It's just easy, not even necessarily to just abandon the faith entirely, but to just kind of be like, ah, it doesn't matter, and just quit practicing your faith. And that's what a lot of people do at that age.
Yep.
All right. Why does a standardized discipleship pathway matter? Why does it help the church?
Because most people do not know how to disciple. And what this does is it gives, so we're starting out with me, Mike, our senior pastor, and three women in the church. And the goal is that by the end of next month, all of us are ready to start a new discipleship group, which it's been three, 4, 5 months, 6 months, something like that now. So the goal is that it's reproducible. It's something that anybody else could do as long as they, you know, love Jesus. And so the hope is that we would be able to invest in people, show them what it looks like to be discipled, and help them grow closer to Jesus. And in a undisclosed frame of time, be able to say, okay, well, I could do this myself too.
Cool.
That's how disciples make disciples.
All right, last question. What is something small but helpful that you've learned over the last couple of months? Could be life advice, could be a Bible thing, could be a relational thing, whatever. What's something small you've learned over the past couple of months that could be helpful to our listeners?
That's a good question. So one of the things that's been more obvious to me in the last couple months, I guess, is just the way that I view sin is very secular, which we'll talk about later.
Okay.
But that's not the way that scripture teaches it. So Jason, correct me if I'm wrong. Hamartia, the Greek word for sin, is an archery term, right? It is to miss the mark.
Yeah, it means to miss the mark, which I believe the Hebrew term for sin means the same thing, right?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Hamartia is not exclusively an archery term.
No.
It's just like also to fall short of a goal in some sort of setting.
So I, for a very long time, had understood sin to be anything outside of the target, I guess. So if you do archery, you know that there's 10 sections that you can hit. Most people don't hit 10s every single time because that would be absolutely nuts. And you should probably attempt to qualify for the Olympics or take a couple steps back because you're like 3 feet from the target. But most people don't hit 10s every time. And so the way that I always thought of sin was it's a yes or no. Do I do this? Do I not do this? Right? And I'm starting to realize that there are times where things are appropriate and times where things are not, which should have been something I learned as a teenager. But
yeah,
especially when it comes to sin, we understand it socially, but we don't always understand it religiously. And so while I might not consider something to be that bad, right? So I like to have a drink every once in a while. But here's where it becomes a problem. If I'm meeting with somebody who is a former alcoholic and I bust out a beer, then where does this go? Well, it's not a 10 and it's not a 0. Right.
Something that may not be sinful in another situation may be sinful because it is harmful to your brother or sister. I'm going to make you hold that thought there because tune in next time our next couple episodes are going to be on secular worldview versus Christian worldview. So I'm going to stop you there so you don't give too much away. A little good teaser call there. I like it.
Jason, what have you been doing for 4 months?
I have been working on my master's of divinity. I have been continuing to work as a preacher. And primarily, I have been spending my time working on a church merger. So if you're from my church, and obviously you know what's been going on. But if you're not, let me fill you in. I was the pastor, senior minister of Berean Christian Church. I am now a preaching minister at United in Faith Christian Church. And I won't give you the whole long story because it's decades and decades of history. But Berean Christian Church was a church split from another Restoration Movement church. And we were like, hey, this is ridiculous. Why are we still separate? We have forgiven each other and God desires unity. So let's get back together and do ministry together. And we have. And we renamed ourselves United in Faith Christian Church. So that's where I'm working now. So I guess technically I've had a job change, but kind of haven't because it is a new church born out of this merger. But I am the resident spreadsheet and leadership and lead meetings guy. That's what I do. I do administrative and executive stuff. Sometime in the next 3 or 4 months, we'll do an episode where Martin interviews me about that so I can explain that better. But that's busy when you're doing a bunch of legal stuff and financial stuff and insurance stuff, trying to bring two churches together. So it's been a lot over the last couple of months, but it's definitely been worthwhile.
So Jason, why does any of that matter?
The MDiv matters because all knowledge of God is valuable. And especially if you're going to be a teacher, you need to be qualified to teach people. I tend to be pretty harsh when I talk about stuff like this, intentionally so. So I'll just continue to be. We have too many uninformed Christians. Not that they aren't smart enough to know better, but they're never given the opportunity because, frankly, their pastors are slacking. Their pastors are not well-educated. And I don't mean you don't have to stack up a ton of degrees to be well-educated. You just have to be disciplined. You need to learn. You need to learn from other people, from books, from lectures, podcasts, whatever you can get your hands on. Go to conferences. Learn from other pastors. You need to be well-informed. We have too many ministers in all sorts of Christian movements that are just not well-informed. The only voices they listen to are the same three people. They don't have any knowledge of Christian movements outside of their own. They have only a passable grasp of how to interpret the Bible. So they may know verses, but they don't know what they mean. I refuse to be that kind of person. So I spend a lot of my time on education because I feel like the people that attend the church that I'm working at deserve that. And anyone else I run across, they deserve the best that I can offer them on that front. The merger matters because unity matters, because we can do better ministry together than we can separately, because any church split, sometimes they are unfortunately necessary. I don't know if this one was or not, because it happened long before I was born, so I won't comment on it one way or the other. Sometimes church splits are unfortunately necessary, but many times, I'd say most of the time, they are unnecessary and thus sinful and need to be corrected. So God desires unity, just like he desires married couples to stay together. I think he desires churches to stay together and to sort past their differences. So we're doing that. It's a few decades late, but we're doing it. And I think that already we've seen the fruit of that. We had three baptisms last week. We're having two more this week. We've had people that were very opposed to the merger that decided to give it a chance. And they're some of our biggest supporters now. We've had people that are relatives or friends that haven't gone to church together in decades, and they've remained friends, but they haven't been able to worship together. And now they get to sit next to each other and worship every Sunday. We have 20 or more kids under fifth grade at our church every single week, plus, you know, 10 or more high schoolers and middle schoolers most weeks. It's awesome. So that's why it matters. The next generation is knowing Jesus because of it. Friendships and families are being restored in worship together, and unity honors Jesus. That's why it's worth it.
Nice. So what about something that you've learned in your many various studies, in your words? Not actually in your words, but Something that can benefit people.
A simple, easy one. When you're reading your Bible, if you're reading in the Old Testament, look up the names of the characters in a story that you're reading, or the name of the prophet of the book that you're reading, or whatever. Look up names as you come across them and see what they mean. Because frequently the meaning of the name will give you a really big hint at what the passage means. So one of my favorite examples of this is Gideon, one of the judges, gets offered the opportunity to become the king of Israel. And he's like, oh no, I can't become the king of Israel. That'd be sinful. God is your king, not me. So, you know, I'll just stay a judge and I'll just do my part, you know? And then he turns around and starts acting like a king. But before he starts acting like a king and his sons start acting like princes, he has this child and you're told his name. His name is Abimelech. Martin, do you remember what that name means?
My dad is the king.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two different words in Hebrew. Melech means king. Ab means father. So when you put it together, I won't bore you with the grammar of it, but it means my father is the king. So he says, oh no, I can't be the king because that's sinful. And then he has a son and he names his son, my father is the king. So the story hints, it foreshadows for you all the bad things that Gideon and his kids are about to do before they even do them. So you read names and it'll tell you what role that person is fulfilling in the story frequently. Not all the time, but frequently. And that can give you a really big hint at what passages mean if you're otherwise confused about what's going on. So look up names in the Hebrew Bible. It's very helpful.
Yeah, and that's something that we've been told probably, but only in certain situations. So like Jesus and Joshua, which is the same name.
Yeah.
For some reason.
Jesus is just a Hellenization and Latinization of...
Hey, don't say that word. That's a bad word.
Goodness. Hellenization means it's Greekified. It's just it's a different version of the name Yeshua, which means he saves. And what does Jesus do? He saves.
He saves.
Amazing.
Jesus saves. Hashtag soccer life.
So... That's what's been going on with us over the last couple of months. We're going to bring you some new episodes, like I said, about the secular and Christian worldview that I think, if that sounds boring to you, please just bear with us, because believe me, it's really helpful to see what ideas you have that you maybe think are Christian that really aren't. That's something that Martin and I have had to wrestle with a lot and will continue to, I'm sure, for much of our lives. And I think every Christian needs to, and it's going to help you in your walk with Jesus. And then we're going to bring you probably a pretty decent series on pretty decently lengthed series on different ministry roles in the church. What I do, what Martin does, what some of my coworkers do. So you can kind of see behind the scenes a little bit how churches are run and why we do the ministries we do and where in the Bible it talks about those kinds of ministries and how you can get involved and help. And I think that's going to be the most important part of that series for you. So we have some good content coming up. We also have a few like a crossover episode with E2 Effective Elders podcast that'll be posted hopefully pretty soon. And we have an interview coming in that we don't quite have on the calendar yet, so I can't tease it too much, but an interview with a exciting burgeoning author that's going to be talking about, well, I won't tell you what she's going to be talking about just yet because we need to make sure we have that on the calendar first. But talking about a book she's hoping to publish soon that will be really, really interesting to a lot of you guys, I think. So
it'll be straight up friggin' lit, bro.
Yeah.
No cap.
All facts, no printer. Anyways, 100%. Thank you guys so much for joining us here today on Pocket Theology. We are super excited to be back, and we will see you probably later this week. Bye, guys.